Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Rhino Nation Radio, sponsored by Rhino Online Strategies and eCreativity. Rhino Nation is a growing community of incredible entrepreneurs and small business owners that share a common trait. They don't walk, they don't run, they charge to their destiny. From the mind-blowing talents of Generation Next to the treasure trove of seasoned business minds, we acknowledge and celebrate their business expertise, leadership, and fearless attitude to be victorious in their goals.
Rhino Nation is committed to making powerful connections and providing enhanced exposure to broaden the reach and promote the extraordinary talent of our community members. I'm Michelle Faust, along with my co-host, Jacob Fan, founder and creative genius of Fantastic Media. And with great pleasure, I want to introduce our special guest today, Jeff Orr, CEO of In Demand Leadership. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you.
Yeah, this is going to be a great conversation. I've been looking forward to it ever since I saw you.
Thank you.
As I'd mentioned in some of my promo social out there, that you have plenty of accomplishments and lots of topics. But
you made me sound awesome. I loved it. I looked at it. I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Well, I think you are awesome. That's why you're here.
That's kind.
We're here as three generations right here, sitting here. And I really want to focus a bit on your millennial leadership that is only a part of what you do. Mm-hmm. So I want to make that very specific that that's a small part. But I always start off with letting our guest give their own little brief bio of what you do.
Sure. I've got a company called In Demand Leadership. So I do leadership consulting, coaching. I work with executives from Fortune 500 companies on down to entrepreneurs and solopreneurs and, different age ranges. I've got clients who are baby boomers. I've got clients who are Gen Xers. I've got clients who are millennials. And I worked with all the different generations in leadership, business development, all those kinds of things. So that's a lot of what I do is based around social marketing, relationship marketing, that kind of thing, because I'm a very relational driven kind of person. And one of my favorite leaders and authors and leadership gurus right now is Simon Sinek. I love his very purpose driven, why driven, and that kind of thing. And I think it's very applicable. I bring that to my clients all the time, whether they're in the C-suite or starting their business or whatever. But it really is driven to why are you doing what you're doing?
And what is your why?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So, what is your why?
I tapped into it right here.
Well, no, I mean, when you start, I think everyone, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, I think everyone, when they start a business or anything, needs to find out what their purpose is and what's their why.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of businesses in today, I talk to a lot of, I mentor a lot of people, and a lot of businesses, I think they fail because they don't have a purpose. They don't know they just want to start a business to start a business. Mm. They don't know to make money. They don't have a real purpose. They don't love what they're doing. They don't know what their purpose in life is. And I think it is a problem. And I think more people need to find their why, definitely.
Yeah. And it boils down to a lot of people think, well, I'm doing this business so I can make money.
Yep.
Right. So I can spend more time with my family. I can do the things I want to do. Of course, they don't realize that it sucks the life out of them most of the time. But the point of I want to make more money. I want to make money. Profit driven.
Yep.
And that's what we're taught in business school, right?
For sure.
The purpose of business is to make money. Well, no. The purpose is not to make money. The purpose is whatever your purpose is. Profit and making money is a result of your vision and purpose.
When you're good at what you do, profits will come.
Exactly.
Right? People will pay there's a saturation of money in this world and people will pay. But like I said, I think, I have a great example. One of the kids I mentor, and I've talked to him about it. He failed because all he was doing is going into businesses and saying, I want this. I want this. And he was all about money. And when I first started my business, I did practically for a year it for free because I loved what I did. Mm-hmm. And I loved, being a part of that process. I wouldn't have done it if I was just money driven. I wouldn't have done it because I wasn't making any money. Right.
And the realistic side is, obviously you have to make money to live. You can't do something for nothing for too long so there's a balance, but it gets down to the purpose. What is it that you're focused on?
Exactly.
And how this plays out practically in larger organizations. If an organization is just focused on the bottom line, well, now we can just lay people off because that's a quick way to get the bottom line. It's all about cutting expenses, cut expenses, cut. Well, how many people are driven by that? Oh, I get up every morning, you know, excited to go to work so I can cut expenses. You know, that's lame. So, but if you're focused on, I'm part of building a product that's actually improving somebody's life and making it easier for them so they spend less time doing whatever and more time on the things they enjoy doing. That's a vision that, you know, I can be a part of. We're changing something. We're making an impact in our community, whatever it is. And, oh, by the way, we're making a whole lot of money out of it because it's meeting a need in our community. People are wanting that product or service. And so that becomes the result of the vision. So that's, yeah, a lot of that purpose needs to become part of it.
And totally agree. Across the generation, I agree with that principle. But it seemed to me that some of the millennials or Gen Z get that more than the baby boomers do.
Yes, more so. And I think it's cultural. Okay, so if we go back to baby boomers, when they started out, you know, into the workforce, the culture was very driven for profit, make money, expand. And that's just the world that you lived in. And you were rewarded for that kind of mindset. So what was driving the boomer generation was that promise of a future reward, a promotion, a raise, bringing in that security into their future. And so that's what was going on culturally, and it was driven that way. Fast forward that now to where we are now. I mean, very different culture, and we are more aware, as one of my friends said, we are omni-aware of all these different things going on around the world. And there are so many more opportunities that we can focus on purpose. I mean, think about it. 1960s, okay? So 55 to 65. Imagine yourself in that time period. How much opportunity did you really have to focus on your quote-unquote purpose in life, right? You know, that wasn't really thought of. You get up, you get a job, you find something that you like to do, and you work for 40 years. That's your purpose. So you really didn't think much about it beyond that. A few people did. Whereas now we've got such a broad ability and to the information that we have available, the opportunities we have available, now we can focus a little bit more on purpose. Why? Because it's easier to make money. Mm-hmm. And as you know, hey, if I want to be an artist or recording an artist and sell records, I don't need a record company to do that. I can now just record my stuff on GarageBand, post it on iTunes, promote it, right? Promote it like crazy, and I can make money. And because I've got such low overhead, I can actually make money at it, you know? So the opportunities are so much more. Entrepreneurism, all kinds of things.
Yeah, you know, one of the universities, I think it was about 5 to 10 years ago, did a study. And I don't know what specific university it was, but I was listening to Kevin O'Leary. And he said that this study found out that they did a, you know, group study. 90% of the people that they took the poll were not happy with their job, right? Mm. 97% of them believe that they can do better, but they were just comfortable, right? And that's a lot of the times, you know, when, you know, I think the older generation was having children at a younger age and they had to have a job for, you know, for support. You know, they say now the best time to start your own business and to find your why is right after college because you have very low overhead. Mm-hmm. You don't have a family. You don't have things. And so I think it's exactly right. It's millennial because I think the older generation is exactly what you just said, for sure.
Yeah, it definitely is easier when you're younger. You can still do it later. It just is more complex.
For sure. You know? You have a lot more responsibilities.
Yeah, well, you have, I think you have the flexibility of mind when you're still absorbing and learning and you can really embrace and throw yourself into the business. And I don't believe people should have children before 30 anyway. Well, that's another subject right there.
Yes. Okay.
But here's kind of my question, I don't think it's a secret that I love millennials. I really tried to do my best to promote them. I've come across so many. It's why Jacob and I are partners because we complement each other so well. And I have come to learn that it is easy to make money, but I still think there's a lot of people out there, even of a younger generation, who haven't figured out quite how to do that. Would you agree? Because I almost feel like there needs to be some education process at, peer to peer, maybe of how do you jump on board these opportunities that are
well, monetizing what you like to do is a different animal than, what we've usually seen. The opportunity is out there. Whether you take advantage of it or figure out how to do it is a different matter. But I'm still thinking about those same things. You know, I'm stuck as a Gen Xer. I'm stuck in between worlds of, growing up thinking, okay, there's a certain way you're supposed to make money, a business model and a way things work, which doesn't really match where we're at today. So I've got this tension inside all the time of how I make a living right now, which is I've got, you've heard of the gig economy. I've got 5 gigs going on at any one time. And that stirs inside me like, that's not supposed to be. You're not supposed to do it that way. Yet, no, you're perfectly okay to do it that way. Now, for you, growing up as a millennial, it's perfectly normal and natural.
Well,
I'll
give you an example. One of the problems, and I'm perfectly fine saying it, when I first started my business, my dad actually wasn't happy with me because he wanted me to go the route of, he's a CPA and it's a job. You go work for someone and for 10 years, 15 years, and you open up your own practice. And so, now, like I said, I have over 160 businesses a month working with them. He sees that and our relationship is getting a lot better, but it was very different. Just as when I talk to my grandparents, it's just not normal and a social norm to do that. But for my generation, there's a lot of, people, but I do understand the fact that you should go work for someone because I'm learning things that I would have probably learned way before and not made the same mistakes if I was working for someone. But I think, it's normal in a lot of cases. I meet a lot of people that are trying to do things on their own. But it's very different for the older generation. I think there's still a lot of those older generations that believe got to go to college. You go work for someone for 15, 20, whatever, how many years, and then you can do your own thing. For sure.
Well, 100 years ago, that was the apprenticeship system.
Yeah.
That model.
Yeah.
And there's certainly, something to be said for that as a methodology. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we will end up circling back around to something similar. Obviously, it will look differently, but something similar. I mean, we're seeing it now with mentorship and coaching and things like that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of revolves around education as well, right? I think that, back with my grandparents, it was you're going to college. You're going to college. Now, I think my generation is getting to the point where is going into 30, 50, 60, 70, $80,000 of debt, and you're not even using those skills. I mean, college doesn't teach you how to do certain skills that you should be learning. And I think that's I don't know if when I have children, if I'm going to make them go to college. There's certain things like that. I don't know if it will reverse back, but it's very interesting how that's going. And I think that, fits in that subset.
That's a whole nother discussion there on the American educational
but I do,
system. But I agree with
that's
you.
That's in the same category of what we're talking about.
I totally agree. I think education is going to look very, very different in the coming years. And it needs to. It needs to change. I had the opportunity to go back and get an MBA. I got two master's degrees at the same time just because I'm crazy and why not? But it was really interesting. I'm sitting through in these classes, and one of the things that I struggled with was the academia didn't really match what was going on in the real world. It's like they have their own, hey, this is the way we do it, and this is the way we think. And I'm thinking, but that's not how people talk in the real world. That's not how they think. And that's not really, let me tell you about all these leadership styles and traits and theories. Nobody cares. They care about, how are you going to resource me? How are you going to help me be better at what I do? And it's just interesting. There's a disconnect sometimes between what is taught in the classroom, even at a master's level, and what's really going on in the real world. Now, when you get somebody who's out there coming in and teaching it, that helps. But just the book knowledge, we could talk about leadership theory all you want, but it's not going to make any difference in your business until I start to bring it down into the real world practice of, hey, this is how you connect with clients. This is how you market your business. This is how you take care of yourself mentally and emotionally and spiritually so that you are the best leader that you can be for your business and you're not blowing yourself by the age of 35.
Wow.
Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
Okay, there you go. Mic drop, no more to say. That's incredible. I can just visualize if we had those kinds of courses or those kinds of opportunities to sit in front of someone like you to learn those leadership skills. And I'm going to bring it down to a very, very base level of a personal experience. When I was in high school, hated math. I still hate math. But I took a course called Consumer Math, and it taught me how to unit price in the grocery store. It taught me about, you know, balancing checkbooks. I learned about the basic principles of taking out a loan, buying a car.
Yeah, now it's called business math. Yeah, and I took that. And I did very well.
It was, and you know, to this day, it's the only class I really remember and think about from my high school years. And I use it too. I'd love to see, you know, more of that. Even if it's high school level, but I think if the universities are going to really survive and teach our future leaders, then they need to teach them entrepreneurism, leadership skills, all of that, or you know, it's going to blow up.
Yeah, and I am seeing some of that in some of the universities here, even locally. They're pressing into, you know, conscious capitalism or, you know, various things and entrepreneurism. And it's very exciting to see. And that's another thing, even with Gen Z that's coming up, they are even more entrepreneurial in nature. And, you know, we talk about millennials and the things that are going on with that generation and what motivates them and inspires them and some of their challenges and things that are going on with them. Gen Z is very different. The latest research on this group, in which is still really fresh, obviously, because they're just now coming into the workforce and they're about mid-college to just exiting. But it's a very interesting group. They're a little bit more independent, a little bit more entrepreneurial. They're very, very connected digitally. So it's a different mindset altogether in regard to how they see the world and how they see opportunity, which is going to make a very interesting challenge for you as a millennial in how you lead them, right? Which is not any different than the boomer leading the Gen X or leading millennial, and so on. All the generations have the similar a similar challenge in regard to leading the next generation. And what it boils down to is, hey, what motivates this group? How can I resource them? And you'll find that it's very similar. The same things that inspire older leaders inspire younger leaders. The same thing that frustrate older leaders frustrates younger leaders.
Yeah, and that goes into the argument, you know, you hear every day that millennials are, you know, they're, what's the word?
Lazy,
and they're...
Are we allowed to say that now?
You know, they're...
Or is that culturally unacceptable?
Yeah, they get everything they want. They expect things, which, in my opinion, I think that's every generation above, like before, always says something about the next generation. And I think, I don't think my dad, when he was my age, was any different than what I was at my age. Like, I just think, and it's funny how millennials are this, millennials are that. I think we're just finding a streamlined way to get to things and doing exactly. through technology exactly. and things like that. So it's very interesting. And I think that's a very open discussion. I was actually listening on the radio the other day. They were talking about that. And someone called in, was like, I'm listening to your show while I'm working my job. Then after this, I go to my next job and I'm a millennial and I have five different jobs that I'm working to put myself through college. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because you hear that and it's completely true.
It is.
I'm well out of college and I've got five jobs. But that's just part of the, you know, what Forbes and many others call the gig economy, where you've got a gig and you've got multiple gigs. I think that's a little bit how I'm wired. I like different things. But back to your comment there on different generations, you know, like with the baby boomers, you know what they heard? Get a haircut, right? Get a haircut, get a job. That's what they heard.
Yep.
And what did my generation hear? Get a job, right? What is your generation hear? Move out,
entitled,
right?
Yeah.
You know, so every generation has something that they've been told or whatever. But what I like to do is, what do we have in common? The baby boomer, what did they want out of a job? They wanted a career fulfillment. They wanted to rise up the corporate ladder. Why? If you get down to the purpose of things, why did they want to do that? Most of it is driven by some sense of purpose of, I want to make a difference in the world, whether it's in my family, my neighborhood, whatever. I want to make a difference.
Set
I want
your
to
mark
live,
on the
you know, you
yep.
live a good life or whatever. And my generation, same thing. Your generation, yep. same thing. We all want the same thing, which is, work with purpose, moving towards something, growing, learning, right? Making an impact at some level. Now, we have different ways of getting there.
Well, yeah, right? I think with our generation is we're finding tools to get us there at an earlier age, possibly. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that, you know, that was my goal for a very long time, was that I wanted to put myself in a position at a very young age to be able to make a difference. I didn't want to be 60, 70, 80 years old where I was making a difference. I wanted to do it in my early 20s.
Right.
And I think that's, like I said, we're just trying to find the right way, streamlining so that it doesn't take us that long to do that. So I think you're exactly correct.
Right. And yep. And so for our generation, older generation, it's like, okay, well, we need to research something. Where do you go? Well, we went to
encyclopedias.
It was called a library.
Yes.
And they had things that were bound with paper. It was amazing. But we would have to take the time to go somewhere else to get that research. Now, millennials and Gen Zers, they do the same thing. You're researching. You just access a different library. Yep. You're accessing it online. So the advantage there is you don't have to get up and go anywhere. You can just do it really quickly. Well, I save an hour of your time.
I still think there are tools tangibly that are good to still use. Like I still write letters to people, right? I think it's still...
I'm sorry, what was it?
Write a letter.
Letter.
Yes.
Letter.
A letter. I think that's still very more personable.
And you put a stamp
on it? Absolutely. But now they do it on the internet, writing a letter where you can actually... It's funny, one of my clients, they actually send out direct mail and they actually have it handwritten when it's technically not handwritten, but it looks handwritten. Right. So there's all those capabilities, but there's certain things like that. It's still really good to go to the library. But yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, it's the same thing, just the tools have changed, which gives more opportunity to save time, to do it more efficiently. That's what I find with a lot of millennials. They use the tool to enhance their effectiveness.
Exactly. And to the point of the commonalities, then also what are the differences? And I can say I have several gigs. And for me, it's too many to do effectively because I'm not wired in the same way to multitask that I think millennials and Generation Z can do, like different things all at once. I didn't grow up doing the multitasking, so it's harder for me to do that. So everyone out there in Radio Land has just figured out that I'm the baby boomer of the group, right?
Okay, I'll be cynical and jaded. I'll be the Gen Xer. I'll play that part. Actually, I am not jaded.
But
okay, maybe a little.
Yeah. So to that point, I love the bridging and the complementary sense of what we all bring to the table. Jacob does things, you know, in our marketing business that, you know, I can't even touch. I can't, you know, I understand it conceptually. Mm-hmm. No, can't do that. And so together, by having
vice versa, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, you know, it is a great compliment. And, you know, so I love working with a generation that can bring, you know, whole new, fresh ideas and out of the box thinking.
Yeah. And I'll give, you know, any one of our listeners, I'll say this, and I talked to Michelle about this. I've had my business for about 3 years. I have over 160 clients. I have not closed one business online. It's all been meeting face to face. Right. And I think that's lost. And like kind of going back, I think that's something that lacks with millennials. Like I said, I think there's sometimes where we think you got to understand who your audience is. And so business owners today are still, you know, majority are over 50, 60, and they like to meet face-to-face. So there's things like that that I think we need, the millennials need to adapt to just as much as Gen X or baby boomers need to adapt to what's going on in the environment with millennials, I think.
I agree. I coach a lot of my clients that same way. It's like, you know, your digital presence is the conversation starter.
Yep.
But in the end, it's all about face-to-face. That's how business is done. And that's here's an interesting thought. I just had this, just an observation from before the internet was really big and online presence and stuff, like early to mid 90s, I noticed a decline in customer service across all industries, culturally in America. Customer service tanked. It was horrible. I hated talking to anybody in customer service because it was just so bad. And then we see the rise online. And I just wonder is it any wonder that millennials have come into an idea of it's just easier to do this online and I have to talk to anybody. I'll order this way or whatever. I wonder if that was partly driven by the fact that corporations in America just tanked on their customer service. So there was no longer a need to do face-to-face because you didn't want to. Who wanted to deal with that? So I'm just going to do it online. And now the technology is available. It's easier. What are your thoughts?
Personally, for me, I can't stand, like, one of our domain hosters of WordPress doesn't have a phone number for you to call, right? If you need customer service.
Yes.
I hate using businesses that don't have a phone number to use because it takes too long to email. So, but there's a lot of websites, a lot of businesses that will only do that. They don't want to have someone on call. I still, I don't know. I think that's my thought.
I agree too, with what you're both saying is that I do think that oftentimes I'm reluctant to call because I don't want sucky, if I can say that word, customer service. So I'll go online, but I want to make sure I'm doing business that does have a phone number because same thing. If I can't figure out how to get it done online, I need to get a live person. I want somebody who's going to walk me through it. And I don't want to spend an hour of my time just going through the website to figure out how to contact somebody.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and I probably shouldn't say this, but as well as someone that can actually speak English, right? There's sometimes where they just, you know, Chase Bank, there's certain things that I can't even understand them. And we're going back and forth for me to understand. And I'm like, you know what? I'll just do this online, right?
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. Yeah. And, you know, it happens a lot because, you know, it's free labor, whatever.
Well, but in a technological, you know, world, we need the sophistication of somebody that we can communicate well with, because at least for me, because I'm way down the learning curve, you know, of understanding a lot of it. But yeah, if I oftentimes need that help. So not that on that one. But there was a question that I wanted to ask you, Jeff, that came up in prior discussion, and that was using the word division.
Mm.
Tell me about inspiring and motivating with vision and not division.
Yeah, we see it a lot more in politics, but I think it has just creeped into all aspects of leadership, where as leaders, we are no longer leading with vision. We are leading with division. Follow me or vote for me because I'm not the other guy. I'm against this. I'm against that. That's not a vision. That's dividing. Now, you hear that all the time. We need to unify. We need to bring people together. You know, it doesn't matter what we do. We are always going to have people that have differing opinions. What we need is a larger vision of where we're going. If I want to cross the street, that's a vision. I want to get over to the other side of the street. Now, there's multiple ways to do it, right? And the three of us might have different ways of doing it. You'll take your car. You know, I might walk and you'll call an Uber to get across the street or an electric scooter, right? But we would get there, the bigger picture. We need a vision, a compelling vision. And I'm just sensing this as in leadership, there's really been lacking a strong, compelling vision for anything over the last number of years. I haven't really thought about how long, but maybe 10 or more years now, to where nothing is really inspiring me. When I hear a leader talk, it's like, I'm not really compelled or inspired. It's not getting my heart beating, what you're talking about, that I would give my personal time to. We talk about, you know, the profit margin, right? Yeah. You know, hey, we're doing this. If I said to a company, hey, raise your hand if you want to give up your personal time, sacrifice some of your family time so that you can make shareholders more money. How many would raise their hand for that vision? Very few. Okay. A few of them might, but very few people would raise their hand. If I said, raise your hand if you want to jump on this vision of creating a product that we're going to be able to introduce into a very simple object that every building has. A light bulb, perhaps, that's going to give access to the internet all over the globe. So it doesn't matter what country, you're always going to have access to information if you can grab that. And this simple device is going to create that. And we're going to create an impact in all these different nations all around the world. Would you give up some time personally for that? I wonder how many people would raise their hand for that. Because that's a compelling vision. There's something very direct and tangible to that, as opposed to nebulous, as opposed to, well, we want to beat the competition. We're going to be better than the competition. What does that mean? And why are we doing that? Simon Sinek talks about that, I think, in his latest book. It was really great. That business is not an end game kind of thing. It's not like you're playing football where there's rules and you have boundaries and you have a score and that's it. You never finish beating the competition unless you kill them and wipe them out. But even then, as he puts it, it's a matter of who's willing to stay in longer and who has the most resources to win, if that's winning. But instead, if we look at how can we better ourselves, how can we grow, how can we improve what we are doing in our purpose and our vision, that starts to get into that, hey, we want to be something more rather than we want to just divide or we want to, you know, just beat that. I don't care if you want to be better than the competition. That doesn't do anything.
I think we learn from our by embracing our competition. Oftentimes,
we can
learn from them. But if you spend all of your time doing nothing but beating them up, you're doing nothing to raise.
Yeah.
Your.
I mean, I have people ask me, "Have you heard about such and such coaching, or have you heard about this coaching program?" I'm like, "No, because I don't care." I can tell you about my coaching program. I'm not going to tell you about theirs. I'm not going to give them the marketing. I'll tell you about mine, what makes me different, and you decide. You've done some research. You figure it out if you want to use me. But I can tell you my vision for helping leaders and inspiring leaders. And whether or not some other coaching program does that, that's fine. But like I said, you're, as a consumer, you're doing the research. You're figuring that out. I will tell you what's unique and about me. What they do is what they do. I'm going to focus on getting better at what I do and how I deliver. That's just my take on it. But
which is a good time to ask about what you're doing in terms of millennial leadership and specific to your recent TEDx talk on millennial leadership. Can you give us a little bit more insight on that?
Sure. A lot of the coaching that I do, especially with teams, will have older leaders. I mean, all three generations easily. And I will coach them as a team and I get one perspective and then I will coach them individually and get a totally different perspective from each one as to what's going on, what's important, what's motivating them, what's not motivating them, and so on. My coaching program will direct specifically, and I customize it toward what each person is needing. I have a number of tools that we use for those kinds of things. But the end goal really is how can one leader inspire the next generation, doesn't matter what age group, and vice versa, because, what, Jacob, what you have to offer is just as valuable as, what a boomer has, and they both learn from each other, right? You feed back and forth to each other. And that's actually, it's one of the most important things, in the coaching process, especially for millennials. They want a two-way learning, not just one way. So
they want to be able to give back and participate from their side as much as they're
right.
Absorbing and learning and taking
and they,
in.
And yeah. They want, obviously, Jacob, you already feel like, hey, I've learned some things. I can pass that on to a 65-year-old and they can learn something from me. Absolutely. The problem that I run into sometimes is that 65-year-old is like, oh, you're young. What do you know? I've been there. I know it. But that gets into a leadership personality issue of, look, if you're a true leader, you need to remain humble and teachable, which means you can learn from anyone. And when you're in that place, a guy like you just shines because you're being poured into as well as participating and pouring back up into somebody, which makes you feel like, wow, I've really got some value here. I'm not just a worker. I'm valuable in helping somebody else grow. It's a cool thing.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I think, and that's why, when I go into business and things like that, I can already tell that they look at me and they're like, okay, this kid looks young, probably doesn't have a lot of experience. And so you got to fight that. And so it happens all the time. And it's just a natural reaction for the older generation to think that a lot of them do.
Well, but that's another reason why we work so well together, because we can kind of identify that. And if Jacob's kind of coming against a bit of a roadblock because somebody has that perception, I can come in and give the same message about what we do, and it's received in a different way.
Well, gray hair coloring is really big with the younger crowd right now. So you could try a couple streaks and that'll add a little wisdom
sure.
to you.
For sure.
We
for
might
sure.
be able to create some wrinkles for you too.
I know, right?
But no, it's true. And here's the funny thing. The ironic thing is I will coach some clients. Some of my clients are financial advisors who are in their 50s, some in their 30s. And like the 30-year-olds are like, what do I have in common with a guy who's retiring, you know, and I'm trying to make my business? And I kind of chuckle because I'm like, I've had this conversation with the 50-year-old who's got an 80-year-old client, and he's saying the same thing. What do I have in common with this guy, you know? So it doesn't matter the age, but it is a real perception that I think we've all gone through, right? And so you're in good company. We've all been there where we've been looked down upon for our youth. And that does require some verbiage change, and being part of a team certainly helps.
Yeah, you got to know. And that comes down to, I think one of the biggest thing in business is knowing who your audience is and knowing who you're talking to. And I think that's something why Michelle and I work great. And I think that's something that people need to learn in college and in school. And that's something that they lack. Is like I said, knowing who you're talking to. It's very interesting. Like I said, we have a range of clients from professional athletes to all the way to seven-figure restaurant chains that are super professional, that you can't drink. You got to dress a certain way. You got to act a certain. So it's just knowing your audience, who you're talking to, and the way you present yourself, I think all goes into play.
Yes. And I've found how you carry yourself in that conversation goes a long way in dispelling the, oh, he's young. No, if you carry yourself well in the conversation, you don't even have to sell me on anything. It's like, wow, this guy's sharp. I'm going to
listen. Look, it's all about results in this world too, right? I don't think it has anything to do with age. Like I said, I think the first thing is, but if you can provide results, I don't care if you're 80 years old or you're 15 years old. I know 15-year-olds, I could do a way better job than someone that's been in the business of marketing for 30 years. So I think it's just, like I said, providing the results is what, at the end of the day, a business owner is going to carry or should care about.
Yeah. So hopefully I've answered the question, but if case I have not, specifically in coaching, you know, specifically with millennials, I think one of the things that I'm focusing some attention on with organizations who quote unquote have the millennial problem, you know, whatever that is defined for them, I try to encourage them as to identify your millennial leaders. Who are they? Are you developing them? Because your millennial leaders are going to be able to lead their peers more effectively than you will. As peers, you know, we tend to listen to our peers a little bit more. So what are you doing to pour into that millennial leader? And then also to get them ready for leading the next generation, which is coming on their doorstep right now.
Right.
So.
Well, and so there's a good segue to, you know, to culture. Okay. So it's more than the foosball table and give away free foods and trying to think you're creating this culture that's going to make millennials just, you know, happy and productive. You know, yes, you do want to provide the culture, but it kind of has to be all encompassing.
Yes, actually, this is some exciting stuff because this is brand new information for a keynote that I'm developing on generational leadership. I have to come up with a much better name, but something with a little pizzazz. Hey, you're a marketing guy, right?
Yep.
Perfect. but the generations, if we start wanting to build a healthy, thriving culture, one that's innovative, right? That was a big buzzword last year. If you're not innovating, you're not competitive and all this stuff. Well, creating an innovative culture requires us to really be authentic first with who we are, understand who we are, and not put window dressing on it. Here's what I mean. Think about when you're growing up, there was an older term, the Kool-Aid house. And I know Kool-Aid's still around, but there was a Kool-Aid house. That's where all the kids would go and hang out because it was a cool place. It didn't always have the best games necessarily, but it was a place that was warm. It was friendly. It was accepting. You felt safe there, that kind of thing. So kids naturally congregated to the Kool-Aid house, right? And there were other houses. Like when I was growing up, I had some friends who had like the latest games and the coolest stuff. And it was okay to be there until like dad got home. And then it was like, man, I want to get out of here because it just felt unsafe for some reason. You know, the family dynamic was just not good. So expand that into the corporate realm. There are certain corporations where the culture, they say one thing, but everybody knows it's not what they say. Yeah, we invite innovation. We have the open door policy. Yeah, well, when I have a question, you certainly aren't, you know, very open to that. Or if I have a suggestion, it's like not listened to. So there's cultures that go on. So as corporations think about developing new cultures, we need to think about developing almost like a family dynamic. And what I mean, I'll expand on this here. Every family's got, you know, multiple children. They've got firstborns, middle, and so on. Think about it. Baby boomers are like the firstborns. They're organized, goal-centric, overachievers. You know, they got their stuff together. And then my generation, Gen X, we're like the middle children, and we're forgotten and jaded. And we're the peacemakers, and we just kind of disappear. And then you've got millennials, and they're like the baby of the family, and they're the fun ones, the social ones. They're cool. They're hip. And then mom and dad had a fourth baby. You know, it's Gen Z. They're coming up, right? But if we think about it in family dynamics, in a healthy family, you would not have the older sibling say to the younger one, oh, you're young, so you don't matter. I'm not going to listen to you because you have nothing to say. And the younger one would never say to the older one, you're old, you're irrelevant, I don't have anything to say to you, in a healthy family situation, right? If we think about our generations and our workforce as a family dynamic, you would have, in a healthy system, you would have the older sibling saying, how can I resource you? How can I help you be better? How can I learn from you? Right? That's what we would be looking toward. And maybe that's where we need to start looking as far as developing a culture. If you want to develop a culture of innovation, you have to create a safe environment where people can fail.
Oh, that's so
true. How many times have we heard failure is not an option? Well, if you're trying to innovate, failure is always the option because you never get to the best idea until you fail. Now, obviously, if you're a neurosurgeon, that's probably not a good idea. You know, there's certain industries where failure is not an option that holds true. But for companies that are trying to develop and try something new, even in a culture, just getting a foosball table and offering free food or beanbag chairs or bring your dog to work day is not going to really change the culture, because the ultimate culture, which is carried on in reality by the top leadership, if it's restrictive, if it's more formalized, all this stuff is just window dressing and people see through it. That's why they keep revolving out the door.
Yeah, I think it just depends. I mean, I think I'll give you, I don't know if you saw the founder about McDonald's, and the original owner, he has his people going, it like just how their processes are all in place. And it's very strict. That's the same, you know, one of the restaurants I work with, Butterfields and Butters, very strict, very, you know, oriented. If the food is off the table, if they're still on there and they're still eating, you know, they got to take it up. And they're super successful because they have a right process. If you mess up, you're gone. And they're not, you know, it's very interesting, but they've been super successful. I think it depends on the industry, exactly what you're saying. I think, depending on, you know, who you're hiring, everything like that, I think it's just all dependent.
Right. And so as a leader, if you set that expectation of, hey, look, this is a pretty intense environment. If you screw up once, you're gone. You just need to know that. Set that expectation. Then you come into it. If that's not who you are, you don't get the job. Yep. You just don't take that.
But with that need to be training to ensure that individual can follow that path.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you can't expect to throw them out there without that very, very specific, whatever it takes, training to make sure that they're equipped to do the job.
Yeah. And that gets into HR and hiring practices and assessments and all that stuff. And and that's why you hire an HR person to do that.
Exactly. So it's interesting then when you think about the four different generations. So when you are giving a leadership workshop, et cetera, are you generally working with multiple generation in the same?
That's interesting you mentioned that, because I'm actually doing a multi-generational workforce workshop on Thursday. I got a call to fill in for somebody who couldn't make it last minute. But typically, I find a lot of boomers and Gen Xers, some millennials, depends on their level of leadership. But it's mostly weighted a little bit higher on the 40 to 60-year-old range. However, I find it most useful if there's younger leaders in the group as well, because I love hearing from them. I love talking to them. And I found an interesting thing. I did a mini workshop probably 4 months ago, and I was told the audience was going to be older. So I kind of geared it more toward older leaders to not dismiss the younger ones and that kind of thing. And it turned out that there were a number of millennials in the group. And so I had to kind of adjust some things. But it was interesting because they were entrepreneurs and they were leaders themselves. And they were like, I don't get why my generation is labeled as entitled. I'm not that way. And so on. And I came across some interesting things in my research recently from, I want to make sure I get his name, Jason Dorsey has been doing a lot of research. And he said he's noticed some things happening within the millennial generation, that there's a split, that there's a certain group, usually a little bit older, but there's a certain group that they're dealing, you know, they're getting a little bit more responsible. They're doing whatever they need to do and taking their place in their jobs and leadership and so on. And the second group is still feeling a little more entitled, and they're more the stereotypical group. And this is splitting apart. And you've got the one group not able to identify with their own generation anymore because they don't understand even their own peers. I can kind of understand that myself because I run into 50-year-olds who are whiny and, you know, entitled themselves. You know, it's just an interesting split that's going on within that generation. So even among their own peers, they're starting to discover, I don't understand how you think that way. So it's making for some interesting conversation as I'm leading workshops on generational leadership and having to deal with a group of people that are not at all stereotypical. They're very driven, very ambitious, and go-getters and so on. I like working with them as much because, you know, they're optimistic, energetic, innovative, creative.
Yeah, I kind of fit in that boat. I don't get the entitled. I have friends that are like that, and it's just the only thing I can see is just the way we were raised. I was raised in a family of working. Like I said, when I first turned 18, I got my real estate license. I was working through college. I literally, my junior and senior year in college, was coming down every single weekend to work real estate. And so I just never, like I said, I think it's maybe the way you're raised, but I deal with it all the time. I'm like, I don't understand how you can think that way. Like, how, it just doesn't make sense. You've had 25 years in this life and you see things and you still, I can't comprehend it. And so I try to think a lot on that. But it's hard to think that. It's within my generation.
Yeah. And the entitlement, really, what is the entitlement? I get what I've heard, but as I talk to various people, sometimes the entitlement comes across like this. Hey, I've got a lot of debt. I'm trying to make my way. I need a job that's going to pay me something that I can live on, and I can't. I deserve to do this, right? I deserve to have a job that's going to pay what I need to survive and get going. Okay, I can understand that. Is that entitlement necessarily, or is it a desire of, you know, look, I've worked, I've got the degree. Now, granted, when I was growing up, it was called paying your dues.
For me, I think you're exactly right. What entitlement to me is like, everything in the world, this college should be free. Should be free, right? You have, you know, some certain political figures, this is free. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know that nothing in this world is free? And that's where I think entitled, I have so many people my age that's where I believe entitlement is of, you know, this is how it should be. And this is this and this. And I'm like, you just don't, that's where I can't comprehend it.
Well, that's where you need to own a business.
Oh, for sure.
And because once you do that, all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a minute.
Yep.
I want you to pay me for my service. No, you said everything should be free, right?
Yeah. Well, if start paying taxes, then you'll understand why.
If college is supposed to be free, well, then go teach at a college. Well, how are you going to pay your bills? I don't know, because you're supposed to be doing this for free, right?
Yeah.
Because
that's where I think entitlement happens.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's where I think entitlement, because I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, the older generation says the entitlement of the paying the dues. I hear that all the time. Got to pay your dues. And that's the thing of going to work for someone.
I hated it. They're like, you got to be kidding me. I'm going to work for nothing and pay, quote unquote, pay
my intern,
dues.
Things like that. People on. Now it's paid intern, right?
That,
I mean, I never,
know. That would
even
be awesome.
During my young age,
I would have
never
done
even
that.
Heard of that. And now any intern that I talk to gets paid somewhat.
Man, I would have done that. Yeah. I didn't get paid for nothing.
No, I mean, my daughter, a definite millennial, she had to put in internship time and she proved herself and she got hired into a very, very good job, but she wasn't paid for her period of time being an intern. But to that point, she didn't like that. she was frustrated, I'll say, with it, because that meant she had to work you know, the nighttime job waiting tables at the, you know, sports bar, to pay your bill.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, I understand companies that, you know, they can't afford to hire an intern or whatever, but, you know, the worker is worth their wage. We do need to respect a person's time and understanding what is going on in their world. And I think that's becoming a shift in the corporation realm. I was reading an article that the perks of the job are not enough anymore, that we need to go beyond that. And that is creating a sense of belonging and that family. For example, NVIDIA, the chip manufacturer, rather than just trying to engage their employees, they are now working toward living life with their employees. So they are offering different levels of assistance or just coming alongside in order to help them in their walk. So for example, somebody who's a Gen X or midlife, they've got young kids, maybe aging parents, they may need a different work schedule, something a little more flexible, work at home or whatever, to be able to handle some of the family things that are going on. And then for millennials, understanding that they've got any number of, you know, bills that are going on. NVIDIA is actually paying $6,000 of their student debt a year, up to $30,000. It's not a perk. It's part of walking with them in their life to help them. So it's just some creative thinking on the part of shaping the culture of the organization, not so that they can be the cool hip kid on the block so that, you know, we'll attract all the young talent. No, instead, they're changing the culture internally so that they become the place that everybody wants to be at because, hey, this is an area, this is a place that really actually cares about me. I'm not just a number to them. I'm not just a productivity figure to them. I have something of value to give, and they are helping me to be a part of it.
And that's why a lot of I've run into a lot of businesses that will give equity now. When you're an employee, they'll give a certain portion of equity or a share, you know, stock or anything like that so that you feel a part. And you know, I think that all the time when you have equity in a business, you want to work even harder because you're treating it just like yours, right? Exactly. So I think that's a huge thing that a lot of
bottom line is your best culture is the Kool-Aid house.
Yes. Cherry.
Great.
Cherry flavored was awesome.
So time always flies when we're in the studio and we're coming up on the end of a really great hour of discussion, which we could probably go on for 2 or 3 more hours. But Jeff, I'm going to have to cut you off.
Yes. I've heard that before.
But
from my teachers.
Stop talking. So let me give you the opportunity. Is there any last words of what you do, what you really want to make sure gets out there? You talked about the workshop coming up. I want to make sure you have that opportunity to let everybody know what it is, when it is, contact information, whatever you want to share. You've got a couple of minutes to
there. Fill your mind with everything I know.
That's right.
Blank. All right. Actually, my passion really is around leadership and helping leaders get better at what they do, not for the sake of building better products, but building better people and helping the next generation grow into great leadership. Because that's where we're really going to see advancement technologically, as a culture, as a nation, is if we start focusing on the things that we can do together. We're not all going to agree on everything. That's fine. That's called diverse thinking. And that's a good thing. But we can agree on a lot of things. And when we find our strengths and find our commonality, we see that the differences matter less. And the accomplishment of doing something greater together than we ever could on our own becomes a driving force. That's where we're going to see some great things happen culturally, societally, as well as personally, in our neighborhoods, in our families, as individuals. Like I said, that's where a lot of my passion is. And I love coming alongside leaders and helping them get the tools and understand and develop new skills to get better at what they do and to master leadership so they can pass that on and help the next generation become masters in leadership.
Well said. Thank you. Yeah. Any contact information you want to throw out there?
You can always grab me at indemandleadership.com. You could also, I do a lot of keynote speaking, so you could check me out at depth.rocks. That's my speaking agent, so you can contact them. Look for more information on how to book me and bring me in, and I'd love to inspire your group and encourage them. And I love doing stuff like that.
That, and when this comes, gets pushed back onto the website as a podcast, your contact information will be on there, as well as your biography, which reads, not your biography, but, you know, your work bio.
The 42-page biography.
Exactly.
I've done a lot. I've been a carpenter and business owner, leadership consultant.
Pretty impressive, no matter how you look at it. No matter how you look at it. So, Jeff, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Really have loved this conversation. I'll close with a word from our sponsor, Rhino Online Strategies and eCreativity will free up your precious and limited time as a business owner to do what you do best, running and growing your business. We help you grow your business by partnering with you to identify your content and marketing needs and provide you with fresh, innovative, dynamic copy that will effectively connect with your market.
Our marketing strategies combine custom content with expertise targeting and reach through social media channels by posting engaging content to targeted specific audiences to capture email addresses and build your email list, along with analytics to optimize social ads and posts, all which lead to increased customer engagement, a higher conversion rate, and increased sales. We help empower you to have control of your business and future by amplifying your message and delivering it to the right market.
Thanks for listening. This is Michelle and Jacob. Wishing you a continued prosperous 2019 and beyond.